Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast, and this is episode number 257. This is Stephen Zimmer broadcasting to you live out of Central Kentucky, and tonight we have a great show and a fantastic guest coming up, and co-hosting with me tonight is the one and only Daniel Dark out of Tennessee, and joining us very shortly, also from the great state of Tennessee, Rose Marie Machario. She'll be joining us in progress, but Daniel is with me, the man himself. Good evening, sir. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, man. I found the parts that I needed for the trolley. Of course, we're going through, you know, massive rainstorms right now. You know, so...
Yeah.
Being up underneath the trolley in flood, you know, doesn't work for me.
No, that's not good, nor does that sound fun. But glad you found the parts, because that's always an adventure. I know that just from when I was getting my Camaro kind of short back up a few years back, and finding parts is always an adventure. But very good, man. That's very good to hear. And it looks like Rose has joined us, and you are live, Rose. I got your mic on. Hello.
Hi.
There she is.
Hey, Rose.
hanging in there. It's been a, you know, typically busy week on the creative front, and not having quite the grand adventures like Daniel getting final parts for his extraordinary trolley, but been getting a lot done. How about you, Rose?
Oh, I've just been eating sandwiches.
Well, I might mention too, happy St. Patrick's Day to all our listeners out there if you're celebrating. And were the sandwiches for St. Patty's Day or just a rose project?
A rose project. One of my fanfic supernatural sandwiches.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice.
Today was John's barbecue sandwich.
Nice. Now, that actually sounds good. Well, you know me. Anytime you mention barbecue, I'm kind of like, okay, that sounds good. So, I could probably get in trouble. But that's awesome. But how have things been going with you? It's been a couple weeks since we've gotten to visit with you, Rose. Got anything to bring us up to date on before we get a little deeper into the show?
No, just been working on sandwiches.
Sandwiches. Sandwiches are the theme here. I love it.
Yes. And just doing that new daily life path number thing that I started doing. So
nice. Very nice. And well, we're glad to have you with us tonight, because, I mean, it's going to be fun, and it's going to definitely tonight's guest is going to definitely be of great interest to you from the broadcasting side and shows and things like that, as well as writing. So, yeah, we're going to have a great discussion. But we definitely probably want to highlight, as we always do, our sponsors for the evening before we get too deep into the adventures of the creative world. And tonight we have two great ones. We have Per Bastet Publications, and then, we have the one, the only, Ren Million. So we'll go ahead and start with Per Bastet and give you just a little bit about them. Great, great press out of Southern Indiana, Louisville area. Per Bastet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bastet offers a little bit of everything. Check out Joanna Foreman's award-winning romantic thriller, Riverwalk Chameleon, or try Ghost Tour Guides, Jacob and Jenny Floyd's Louisville's Strange and Unusual Haunts, and Indiana's Strange and Unusual Haunts. travel back to ancient Egypt with Pee Lee Harris as the eloquent scribe and see just how much trouble a temple cat can drag an innocent young scribe into. We're head for the future in Marian Allen's science fiction short story collection, Other Earth, Other Stars. You can find these titles and more at perbastetpublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at regional events, including Imaginarium Convention this summer. Perbastet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. Thank you, Teely, Marian, and Sarah. Marian, you all are great, and very much appreciate your support of the show. And our second sponsor of the evening is Renmillion, who is another one that we all know and love here on the Star Chamber show. And here's a bit from her.
Have you hit a wall with your story and you're not sure where it's going anymore? Feeling uninspired? Need a book that doesn't look like it's self-published? Hire a muse with 33 years' experience as an illustrator, writer, and designer. Hi, I'm Renmillion. You can find me everywhere online with a quick search, R-E-N-M-E-L-E-O-N. Thanks for tuning into the Star Chamber.
And thank you, Renmillion. I have to say, Rose and Daniel, but just the name Renmillion is just so fun to say. It's just a fun, fun name to say. That's one of those. But yes, we thank. Yeah, they're also known as Anna Maria Silvaggio. Yeah, we thank her very much for support there. And so as far as any upcoming news, as far as our creative camp goes, just a reminder, if you have a desire to become a panelist or guest at Imaginarium Convention this summer, either on the virtual side or the in-person side, or even both, do get your guest applications in. We're going through a lot of work with guest apps right now, and the first wave of guests is about to be announced pretty shortly, so get your guest applications in. If you have a film project, get that in via Film Freeway. We're a gold film festival there. We have gold status with Film Freeway, and you can find us on their platform to submit film projects for our film festival. So all that is rolling at full tilt right now. Of course, we do have vendor space for those wanting to exhibit, and all expo spaces come with a virtual space as well. So you get kind of much more for your money now that we are a hybrid convention and probably one of the only ones in the country that are doing full virtual and in-person events simultaneously. So we're pretty cutting edge, and it's heading here into year 8. That's pretty exciting. And then also on the press front, wanted to congratulate Lee E.E. Stone, and got a great new book that's just come out called of Episode 1 of Men Who Were Also Monsters. And that kicks off a great new, what Lee calls New Weird Mythology series. And that's a kind of a blend of urban fantasy, horror, and dark fantasy. Really good stuff. I mean, if you like stuff like Jim Butcher, stuff like that, the Dresden stuff, you will really, that's a good segue into this. Really got a really good edge to it. It's got some Clive Barker-esque kind of elements in it. Really fun stuff. So check that out. It's available in ebook formats. And we also had a new children's book come out recently on Seventh Star Child. And it's helpful tips for kids adjusting to the new normal. And it is a really positive book for children to help them adjust to just all the changes that they've had to deal with in the pandemic era, with all the, mask wearing and social distancing and all the stuff that, is a lot very difficult for a lot of kids to handle and having to do a lot of home learning rather than in school learning. This is a really positive overview of that helps gives kids tips on how to handle it in a very positive very, very good manner. And I think that people will really appreciate if they get it for their kids. Good book. It's out now in print and ebook, and keeping us very busy with all these new titles coming out. And yours truly will have a new print book announced here very shortly as well. I'll give you a hint. It's a compendium, and it does put into print some things that are available in ebook only right now. But we'll save that for after the official announcement. But that's a little teaser for y'all. So that catches us up, I think, on the news. And So what do you say? It looks like our guest is actually in queue. So I think we'll go ahead and get this show on the road. What do you say, guys?
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, this is going to be a fun convo. And ever since Holly told me about tonight's guest, I've really been looking forward to having her with us. And she's one of those multifaceted types that we love as far as the creatives go. She is an author, a narrator, a poet, an on-air radio personality, and a motivational speaker. And she is the writer of the urban fiction trilogy, the Black College Sabbatical Trilogy. She's also the founder of B-Side Broadcasting Network and also is the founder of B-Side Multimedia LLC, entertainment production company. And if that's not enough, she is also a professional audiobook narrator. And I'm bringing on to the show for the very first time and welcoming aboard Tracy E. Christian. Tracy, you are on the Star Chamber Show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Yeah, doing great. How are you doing?
Well, how are you, Tracy?
Hey, I'm so excited. I am so excited. You guys are my very first interview in 2021. And I am just super excited because you guys are big news, man. You guys are big news. I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I hope things are good up in Detroit. Yeah, we got some cold, rainy weather down here, but hopefully things are a little better up in Detroit right now. I know that's a little north of where we are.
We are very much so. But you know what? It's kind of, we've had a really, really mild winter. So it's not too bad weather-wise if we can just kind of, you know, get this whole pandemic thing under control in Michigan for, you know, an elongated amount of time, we'll be all right.
Oh, I'm with you. I think we're all ready to get this pandemic thing under control.
I know, right?
Oh, yeah. But we're going to have to be on our A game tonight because you've got so much of a radio background. We're going to have to make sure we do a good job for you here on the air tonight. But, wow, I mean, you have so much. I mean, I love having guests like you on because it's so fun to dive into different creative spheres and kind of talk about a lot of different things. And with you, I mean, obviously, you know, we love writers and so forth, but you also have so much on the multimedia and media side, and then also with your audiobook narration. But let's go ahead and maybe start, because a lot of our audience are writers, introduce your trilogy and tell us a little bit about it, because I would like to read it after finding out about your trilogy. It sounds really interesting. So, yeah, introduce that and let us know about it.
Okay, well, my trilogy series is, as you stated earlier, it's the Black College Sabbatical Trilogy Series. And what it does is basically, I call it a throwback fiction story because when I actually wrote this book, I just wanted to write a story about attending a historically black college. I wanted to hit the points that I thought a few of the movies and books that had come out before hadn't hit, you know. So I kind of took that component and went into it, writing just about four girls from different walks of life that all meet, you know, attending their first year at a HBCU, not knowing each other prior. The key to it is the fact that, you know, as a freshman in any college, at HBCU is a much different. You know, there's a lot that the students learn that have absolutely nothing to do with classes. You know, they learn a lot socially. It's like their first social science project, if you will. So what we did was, is I know as a reader, I always love to have somebody with me that, you know, that is kind of reading the story along with me, you know. So what I created was a sub character, and that is the angel. The guardian angel introduced himself at the beginning of the book and kind of alerts the reader that they're there to protect and that they are the reader's reading companion. And so they're reading this story along with the reader, and they're giving them the task to figure out with everything that each girl encounters, all the other three are affected. So who needs the guardian angel's protection most on this journey? Because they start off as girls, and, you know, through the course of the fall quarter, the winter quarter, and then the spring quarter, which is that entire first year, they start the course toward womanhood. And so each one of them go through something major. And just when you think you got it figured out and you're like, okay, the angel's here to protect that one, we kind of flip the script, and then you know, you're perplexed. You don't know who to you don't know who to run to. And then, of course,
right,
at the end of spring quarter, the final installment, that's when you kind of find out, you know, who, in fact, the angel is there to protect. But you hit all these other, you know, talking points and situations and scenarios in between, everything that good fiction lends to.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it sounds like it's very character-driven. And, you know, when you're in your first year of college, for a lot of young folks, I mean, it's like your first time that you all of a sudden, you know, you have this great freedom. And with that comes a lot of pitfalls. And I'm guessing that's kind of, you know, what your characters are kind of getting into. It's like, you know, you have all that new opportunities and new things, and you don't have, you know, necessarily the control of parents over you for the first time in your life, and then you run into trouble sometimes. And I'm guessing that's where guardian angels come in.
Run into trouble, you cause trouble, and trouble smacks you upside the head, all of that, you know, and they go through all of that. And then we kind of just shine a light on some of the other issues that surround that particular set of institutions, you know, underfunding, you know, when bad situations happen, the media coverage that kind of goes along with that, you know, which is always lacking when it's good stuff, but when it's juicy bad stuff, then, you know, it's widespread, and those things are kind of explored, those themes are explored through the book as well, you know. So it speaks about, it was written, I started writing the book in 2002, and it published in, published the first installment in 2007. So it's a throwback now, but the reason that makes it pertinent now is the fact that, you know, HBCUs are trending again now that we have a vice president that is, you know, a HBCU alum. And then also all three installments of the book are now available in audio, which was kind of like my initial dream when I decided I wanted to pursue being an author. I wanted to be able to present my books in three different forms. I'm still trying to figure out how to do it cheaply in Braille. Once I get that figured out, I'll be cooking with gas.
Yeah, I haven't quite gotten into Braille myself as a publisher. So that's let me know how that goes, because I've never tackled that one.
Okay.
Not yet.
that's way off. But, you know, I at that particular time, I would have never even thought that not only would I be able to, you know, to offer these stories in audio, but to be the one who wound up narrating them. Because initially I did have a narrator that I selected, and she ran into technical issues when she was just about done with the first book. And, you know, I didn't really have a whole bunch of people to audition, and I had been doing books for other authors, you know, completely different genres from what I write, you know, and was kind of still in the process of, you know, even warming up to calling myself a voiceover artist, you know, because I just started off as a writer, didn't know it was going to go into this acting thing or this component of it, but it's been a blessing, and it's been a learning curve, that a major one, you know, but an exciting one at the same time. So, yeah.
Well, you know, it sounds like audiobooks would be a very natural extension for you, because, you know, I was reading about your B-side broadcasting network, and then, you know, you have a radio show, and by the way, a lot of the genres that you play on it, I love, so I'm sure I would love to crank up the, you know, the speakers when your show's on. But being a radio show host, though, I mean, you're used to being a personality in audio, and, you know, using your voice and things like that, so must have, for you, listening, been a very natural kind of progression to becoming a book narrator. And I'd love to hear your comments on that transition.
Well, one would think, but, you know, I studied radio in college, but you ever studied something but still had too many insecurities to really take yourself seriously in it?
Oh, yes.
That's kind of what I experienced. That's what I experienced. So, strangely enough, I wound up graduating from college and totally running, from radio because I was comparing myself to everybody who was already successful in it in the town that I came from, because like I'm from Detroit. We had a huge urban radio market at the time, early 90s or whatever, and I had so many professional DJs that I looked up to, and I was comparing myself to them, and I ran from it and wound up stumbling into education, and that made me rediscover my love for writing. And once I wrote the books, I had to, you know, I self-published, and so that wasn't initially the plan. It just kind of worked out that way, and I wound up learning on the fly that when you self-publish, you have to market and do everything yourself. And I wound up snagging an interview with someone who was running their own independent radio station. They wound up being like 9 years my junior. And when I went to visit their home studio for this interview about my books, they had equipment and digital radio set up in a way that was more advanced than where I studied at college. You know, so I was like, wow. And they offered me, I said a couple things during the interview that let him know that I had studied radio. And so he offered me the opportunity to do my own show. And it was an all underground hip-hop radio station. So I didn't even know how my interview about my books was going to go over with his audience, but with a little coercing, and he kept calling me and kept, you know, offering this opportunity. And I wound up training with him, and my show will be 9 years old this year, and it has led me to an entire broadcast network of my own. You know, I don't even broadcast with that particular network anymore. I just do my own thing. So I kind of extended my show and turned it into a 24-hour broadcast with the thought of retro radio in mind, you know, the way we used to listen to music in the 80s and the 70s and the 90s, you know, when you used to really fall in love with a DJ and their format and that type of thing, you know. So I've been writing the whole time. Like, the Black College Sabbatical is the first three books that I wrote, but right now I'm actually in the midst of writing book number 9, which is, you know, a revisit, a 20-year reunion book called Murder on the Yard for the Black College Sabbatical. So I'm in the middle of that, and then. Yeah, you know, so it's kind of fun because I'm revisiting the old characters, and I want to show how legacy happens. My husband and I met at a HBCU, and our daughter wound up attending that same college and graduating in 2019. So in the book, there are a couple characters who are legacies. Their parents, their grandparents attended this school, and they're still very connected to the university and their adult life, and they're on the board, and some of them work for the university. They have children that go to the university, you know, so, but the whole thing surrounds a murder. So it's my first murder mystery type.
And, wow. So if this one branches out a little bit into some other genre areas, that's cool. Yeah, murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's been fun doing that. It's been fun exploring it. When I wound up recording, you know, the first three installments, it made me revisit the story. And I was like, you know, wow, you know, thinking about the pandemic and everything that's been going on, this particular book I'm writing ahead of time, because last year all HBCU sports, you know, was shut down, no homecomings, no campus events. And so now schools are looking at how they're going to do that, you know, moving forward. So that's kind of where we're picking up this story, you know, with a changing of the guards as far as, you know, the school's president. It's an unprecedented time, you know, so kind of writing this book in advance, kind of watching the world and how the schools are reopening and encompassing that into the story. So it's interesting.
Oh, it sounds like it's got some amazing storytelling potential with the characters, with the type of genre that you're working with now, with murder mystery, and definitely with the times, because it's, you know, I can only imagine what it's like to always like to be a freshman myself, you know, back in the past when you come to school, but then to come into, you know, school now with not only all the, you know, pressures and things that you deal with as a freshman normally, but also now with all this pandemic stuff thrown on top of that. I mean, it's definitely not an easy time to be a freshman or, you know, somebody going to college right now.
Absolutely. Right. Or a college senior, or, you know, an administrator, somebody trying to, you know, operate a whole university a completely different kind of way on the fly. You know, so it's... It's interesting. It's interesting to write, and, you know, I don't want to be too wordy with it, but I'm having fun with it. It's great to revisit that story, you know. And then so literally my writing took me all the way around the world. I was running from myself, and that's how I got into the radio, and it was kind of the same thing 4 years, not even 4 years ago, it was 5 years ago when I got into the narration portion. Somebody just offered up a book, and I noticed there weren't a whole, at that particular time, there weren't a whole bunch of audio books that lent to, you know, African-American fiction. You know, no matter whether it was street lit, whether it was just urban fiction or what have you, it wasn't a lot. So there were some authors who were kind of looking people with a more urban sound and voice and, you know, the kind of new city slang and that type of thing. And they offered me an opportunity, and I tried it. And, you know, I got some of my harshest criticism in narration, you know, because, of course, audiobook listeners are listening for not just the story, but, you know, the way that it's depicted, you know, the way that it's performed, you know, so you definitely are stepping up to a new learning curve. So it was a humility that came with that genre, you know, that almost made me quit. But right at the time when I was ready to quit, because I thought it might have been something that, you know, I just wasn't good at, I had authors that were requesting me, and they were listening to, you know, samples that I put on the site that were really timid and scared, but it was still enough to make people want to book me. So kind of like anything else, got to keep going. The only way you're going to get better is if you keep doing it, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's been
Absolutely.
Working out for me.
No, that's great. And the other thing you said, like, sorry, Daniel, did you have something?
Are you planning on being the next Oprah Winfrey then?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. I could barely understand you. Could you repeat it?
I said, are you planning on being the next Oprah Winfrey then?
I don't know about the next Oprah Winfrey. I'm just trying to perfect the best Tracy Christian. Let's see how that goes. But if I get on Oprah status, I won't be mad at it.
Yeah, no, I won't be too mad.
Well,
she's
from Nashville down here, so.
Yeah. It's a very interesting time with all this. You know, I've seen some great strides, and I've made some great strides, but I'm always learning, you know, and even with you know, helping other authors now, you know, I have a few authors that I have helped realize their story. I don't necessarily call myself a publisher because I'm still trying to figure that part out, but I do know how to walk authors through, you know, that initial process of just getting started, writing your manuscript and putting your ideas together and, you know, being able to actually, you know, put your story and thoughts into book form. And that's been teaching me a lot as well. You know, it's been an interesting almost 20 years in this. It's been very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm still learning every day, you know.
So you've become a coach and mentor, an author coach and mentor in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Sounds like. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. And there are writers that need that. And once they get that little bit of guidance, encouragement, and support, they tend to thrive. I've seen that many times. So definitely kudos to you for doing that for other authors as well as pursuing your own road. That's awesome. And but yeah, as far as the audiobook world, you know, we were just had a guest on last week that was talking about the learning curve and of course getting you know, your audio quality to where it'll pass you know, of course, the standards like ACX or some of those platforms.
Yeah.
And things like that. It's yes, definitely an adventure. Yeah, and people don't really know how much goes into it until they've actually gone through it. And the amount of hours of recording and then going back and editing. And then, you know, you've got, you know, every little thing might pick up on the mic. So, I mean, you got a lot of it, you know, a lot of issues with audio levels. And, yeah, it's definitely not as simple as some people think of just, you know, turning on a mic and reading your book. I mean, it is extremely involved and quite a project. Yeah.
Trust me, I have a home studio, and I'm always looking for ways to, you know, improve. I'm always watching videos, you know, ACX as a whole, you know, Audio University, you know, series of videos, you know, that they give helpful hints and tips about how to set up your home studio. But then there's a process that I find that they don't cover. I'm even thinking about maybe doing a short little, you know, vlog, a video blog about it. Just the fact that you have to learn your environment wherever, if you are creating a home studio, you have to learn your surroundings, you know, just around your home, like in the wintertime, when you have the heat on, when your furnace kicks on and when it kicks off, you'd be surprised. The better the mic, the more things that pick up in the background, you know, and understanding ambient sound in the room.
Uh-huh.
You know, I find myself recording at 5 a.m. when everybody in the house is asleep. And staying away from it till after 1 o'clock in the afternoon when I know my mailman has traveled down the street already, because he tends to be loud coming down the street. It's funny in the summertime, you know, when people are doing yard work, that type of thing, and you might be really in the mood to record, but you kind of have to alter your schedule and create a schedule that's kind of, you know, works around those busy times. You know, just in your surroundings, you know, and then being willing to invest in the things that kind of help drown those sounds out, no matter where you are in the house, you know. So it's an interesting situation, and it took me a while, and I'm still learning, as always. You know, I'm always watching videos to improve, even with my books. You know, marketing has always been my Achilles heel, because I'm a creative. I'm not necessarily a retail marketing type of person. I don't have that same drive. I'm an introvert. I like to, you know, go create the story, put it out there and see what it does. But because I am a self-published author, I'm an indie author, you know, I have to, you know, constantly research, you know, different avenues and different resources that are within my budget that can help me get my stories out there, you know. And as long as you're open to doing that, and if you're not looking to get rich quick, then, you know, you can go ahead and do the author thing and have a ball with it. If you're looking to get rich quick, this might not be for you.
No. And it's amazing how many people go into it thinking that's what's going to happen. And I go, surprise.
You know, my favorite line is, oh, you wrote a book? I should write a book real quick. I'd be like, yeah, you go right ahead.
Yeah, you go right ahead.
Go for it. Have at it.
Well, I think I can speak for Rose and Daniel, that the three of us, I mean, we agree with you. We try to make it fun. I mean, because, you know, it is often frustrating. They're always changing the landscape of the book market. I mean, every 6 months it seems to change. And so, I mean, there's always curveballs being thrown at us and all of us. And it's, so marketing is definitely one of those things that can really drive you crazy if you don't try to inject a little fun into it.
And just opening yourself up a different type of way. I'm beginning to recognize, you know, like I didn't want to be one of those authors that, you know, whenever people would talk to me, that's all I talked about. So I would start going to like networking events, and unless they asked me what I did, I just did a lot of listening and just watching, you know, and seeing how people engage with one another, and seeing the people that impressed me or made me want to follow up and look up their product after talking with them, and kind of, you know, incorporate some of those components into the way that I conduct myself when I'm networking. And I'm still working on it, but I find that when I do get to talking with someone about what I do organically, you know, that has been more successful for me than just coming up with a dry pitch every time you meet someone. You know what I mean? You know, I think people invest in relationships when you don't have that name recognition that'll make them say, oh my gosh, she's got another book out, let me go get it. You know, you got to let them get to know you, but in a way that makes you comfortable, you know.
Oh, exactly. And it's, you know, a little trickier in this pandemic era because we don't have as many live events where we can interact with people face to face. But obviously on the other end of the spectrum, you know, we've had an explosion in Zoom experience for Zoom meetings and things like that. And a lot more in terms of the video. And Daniel is actually
embracing it.
Yeah, very much so. And Daniel, when you were talking about just sitting back and listening to networking sessions and seeing how people interact with that, it sounds exactly what I hear like from Daniel, because he's actually been doing a lot of that via Zoom. And today we actually was doing that, I believe. But Daniel has been doing a lot of what you're talking about. And, yeah, it sounds very similar.
Yeah, I've been on Zoom calls since about 9:30 this morning.
Wow.
With got different
it,
people.
And yeah. I've noticed now that people are getting really, you know, just getting really, really creative with the way that, you know, with the way that they're using the whole online component, you know. So I've peeped out a few authors or publishing consultants or publishers that are, you know, offering a little more information than I found available when I was first starting out, you know, and using that to, you know, kind of propel the way that they, you know, promote themselves or open themselves up, you know, virtually to the masses. You know, sometimes, you know, you all have to offer something in order to get some things back, you know what I mean? And I know that was one of the biggest things that I had trouble with starting out, is just like kind of getting a little guidance. Either I didn't want anyone to write for me or to publish for me. I just kind of wanted to know where to start, you know, because I was just really on, let me write this book. And once I finally got it written, I didn't really know where to start in, you know, putting it out there and making it available to the masses. And now I find that a lot of, you know, people are more willing to offer up tips and helpful hints that, you know, and that goes a long way. It goes a long way in making people trust your work, you know, with you being brand new as opposed to, you know, being someone who's already really, really successful at it. Or successful at something, and now you're trying this book thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like a celebrity personality releasing their first book, something like that. Yeah. That's a, I know all the major publishers just love that situation.
Unfortunately, right. Yeah. It's perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We can't depend on that all on the independent level all the time. So it's it's a little bit of as I call it, sweat equity. You know, you just got to get out there and work at it. And
I
it's
like
sweat
equity.
Yeah, sweat equity. That's my term. But it's worth it. And I know Rose probably could comment a little here on it, because I know she's developed stuff from scratch where she had learning curves even in developing her own TV show and ended up making a very, very nice one, which I hope she, you know, develops and explores again in the future. But yeah, Rose could probably chime in a little bit on that, you know, building self-knowledge and learning curves.
Oh, well, lots of learning curves. Oh my gosh. I don't think that I could have failed more than I have and learned from my mistakes. And it took 9 years of, almost 9 years of getting told no a lot before I met Steven for him to give me a yes on my book. And then, yeah, so it was a long time, but I wasn't willing to give up. So, and I took advice, but then the advice just didn't sit well with me. I still wanted to, you know, keep going and keep pushing, because I really believed in my story and felt like other people, you know, could relate in some way or another from it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it wasn't,
you know,
like
what?
Really one of those things that was planned, it just happened.
And that's usually the way it goes, isn't it? You know, like, you know, I tell people all the time, I was like, the biggest hurdle is knowing how to keep yourself motivated during those quiet moments in artistry. You know, because it gets real quiet before you have a stream of success, no matter how big or small it is. It gets very, very quiet in between, and it's hard to always, you know, your family supports you, and, you know, they want to see you win. But even for them living their lives, it's hard for them to always be your rah-rah section every time you need it. You know, and you have to find a way to kind of keep yourself motivated. And I remember one time in particular when I first started the audiobook component of this literary journey, and there was this one particular author, L. Casey, she's the bomb, and I had saw maybe about two or three of her books. It was like a series, you know, and she has several series out, but I saw one series and it was like a supernatural series, you know, and it, you know, the little audition script that she put up, I really liked them. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and I'm put myself out here. I'm going to audition and audition for all three of them separately. And I got turned down for all three of them, which is real typical with ACX, you know, and the audition circuit. The difference was is that she cared enough to hit me up in a personal email and say why she had turned me down, because usually you won't get a reply directly from the rights holder. You know, it'll just be ACX saying someone else has been selected for this and, you know, just keep auditioning, you know, keep trying. But she actually reached out to me via email, and she just said that I really, really love your voice, but this is a teen series. And I hadn't really paid attention to that part. You know, I was just kind of engulfed in what the story was about, and I found that interesting and went ahead and auditioned. And so she said, I really like your voice, but I just feel like your voice is a little too heavy for this particular series because it's a teen series. So, you know, the lead character needs to sound a little more youthful. She was like, but if you give me your direct email, I'm going to mention you, you know, to the producers for one of my other series, for one of my other books. And I was like, well, wow, you know, that's so sweet. I just thought it was so, you know, professional that she even reached out to let me know why, you know. And I said, okay, you know, I gave her my email, and I really didn't think any more about it. I didn't expect to hear anything. Maybe about 3 days later, her publisher got with me, and they wound up, you know, sending for me about 3 months later to record one of her books. And at that particular time, it was one of the biggest audiobook projects that I had done, and it was the first one that I did not have to actually engineer and produce. I was the talent, and that's it. And I went out to a bigger, more professional studio than my home, and, you know, I had a director and I had a separate engineer, and it was an awesome experience, and I couldn't believe it. And it was all because, you know, I kind of persevered after being turned down mm-hmm. three times individually. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, when I got turned down, I cried. And I was like, well, forget it. If they won't let me record their book, I'll just record one of my own. And I actually mm-hmm. started doing the audio work for one of my own books at that time, not the sabbatical books, but one of the books that came after that. And so in the meantime, while they were negotiating with me for the contract for her book, which was like 2 months off, I was still recording my first audio book, you know, of my titles. And the royalties for one came in while I was doing the other one. And I was just like, oh, my God, this could really this could really lead to something. But it came off of a major disappointment, you know, and right. still going forward with it. You know, I don't know how mm-hmm. I did it, but I'm so glad.
Oh, that's exactly what, you know, I was listening to what Rose is talking about and what you're talking about. And that's the key, is not looking at the times that you get told no, or you make a mistake, or you think you failed. I mean, mm-hmm. every one of those things you learn from, and you take it and use it. And then you take a step mm-hmm. forward, and you channel the frustration into motivating, kind of like a motivating mm-hmm. force too. And it's just so, mm-hmm. you know, if you just follow through, and like Rose is an example, you're obviously an example. And, you know, if you just, you know, can fight through that, that you will, you know, get to where you're starting to get a few yeses, and people do, you know, start working with you and doing projects with you. And that's the key, you know, it's perseverance and not mm-hmm. not letting those no's and, you know, what you would call failures. You know, I tend to look at them as each one as something I can, that's part of my educational process. If I've, you know, fallen short, you know, one time, I get back up and figure out what I did wrong or what I need to improve on, and then, you know, get back in the race. And that's what you got to do. And it's great to hear, you know, you with that kind of message, because that's how we get somewhere. And you've obviously been growing.
Yeah.
Audiobooks,
that's
books,
that learning
a radio
curve
show.
They don't tell you about, right? You know, that's that learning curve yeah. they don't tell you about, you know.
And I heard that, you know, that when you said vlog, so it looks like you're getting ready to do some video broadcasting too, which is, you know, that opens up another front for you. That's going to be great. And As far as the video side goes, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's another avenue for your books. They sound how you described them, that they would adapt very well to like episodic television, like something you see on Hulu, Netflix. There's so many series being made now.
From your lips, Stephen.
Yeah.
You're putting it in the air from your lips. Let's hope it goes that way. I've been looking at
you
stuff.
Got it.
And this doggone pandemic has got my whole family with it. Everybody in the house is taking at least one streaming service, just one. So we
trying
to keep up with what's
and
out there. I think that any of my books could be a series on Netflix, or Hulu or BET Plus, whomever.
And honestly, with the shift to streaming that's happened, I mean, I think there's even a greater demand for series than there is movies. I know that sounds maybe a little crazy, but you
see
it.
I thought it was just me.
No, I think I see it too. I think there's a few. Yeah, it's just like every time you turn on Netflix, much of what they're putting on there, Hulu, et cetera, is our series. So the episodic type format has really kind of exploded in this environment where everybody's streaming and home theaters and think movie theaters largely were closed mostly, and it's definitely taken a different turn. It's a good. It's a tough market to be a writer, but in the production market, there's a lot more opportunity that's opened up with channels, with streaming and things like that. So that's definitely something. Hopefully that you can pursue that.
I remember starting this. I remember when I started writing. It was at a time when everybody was still trying to figure out how this ebook thing was going to work. everybody was still trying to say, I don't know. I love a traditional book. And, some people just were not willing to warm up to it. And then you looked a few years later and it just, skyrocketed, into something different. And so, looking at it now, there's so much potential out there. I mean, that it's a rough market. Entertainment's always rough. But then at the same time, just, being thankful to finally be able to have some integrity and some belief in my own talent and not being at a loss for content. And every time, like I told you guys before, every time I've even contemplated maybe giving up or thinking that maybe I'm a little too old to do this, because when I started, I was 30, and now I am 48. So, and I've done things that I could have never imagined at the time when I started. And so I just feel blessed that these opportunities have opened up in such a way, and then people, to come in contact with, organizations and shows like you guys, you give a platform for us creatives, what I'm saying? And we just appreciate you guys, man, because, without you guys,
no one would know.
We have no one to talk to.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly why we do the show, and because there are so many great creatives that need to be spotlighted, and there's so much out there that I've always said that, like with the major press or something like that, they aren't going to take too many chances because they got such a big bottom line. So they're going to put out things that they're pretty safe, it's going to sell, and they're not going to take too many risks creatively. The people that are really creative, taking creative risks, the people that are really telling different kinds of stories, people that are really, taking a big, step, in terms of, different, mixing of genres to other things. It's all happening on the independent level. I mean, it's not happening nearly as much on the larger level. It's happening on the independent level. And that's what people, once they tune into it and discover that there's a wealth of it. I think the whole market could grow.
Absolutely.
The indie market.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about it is, like, even with when I really decided, because, I got through these first three books and was like, okay, let's step away from, this black college story and let's step into some more things. And I wrote Toast to the Fool, which is a story about five friends who are, are at a turning point in their lives, and they are battling the most fierce enemy that they've ever come up against, themselves. Everybody is at a foolish turning point in their lives at the beginning of the book, and you have to watch them help each other maneuver through their own issues and sorrows and that type of thing. And that's why it's called Toast to the Fool, because if we know, I feel like everybody's had that point where they have to give a toast to the fool that they've been, because without those lessons, you wouldn't be the person that you are now. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
So,
oh,
but again,
been
you know,
there.
Still adding all
been
the components, still adding
yeah.
all the components to fiction, you know, that exists. And that's when I came up with the idea of the fact that I don't want to be known to just write regular fiction or urban fiction or African-American fiction. I like to call my genre reflective fiction, because I want to write the type of stories where the characters go through things that put something on the reader's mind and gives them, you know, things to think about or presents things that they've maybe encountered, but they've never really, you know, vocalized to anyone. You know what I mean? Just, you know, the type of fiction that makes you think. And that's why I call it reflective fiction. So, you know, there was Toast to the Fool, and, you know, and then through the radio show, I start off each show, I start off with a mental meal, which is no more than just food for thought. It started off with quotes that I would find, and I would just write a commentary as to how that quote related to my life. But over the years, it has grown to quotes that I have created myself that relate to things that I've learned, life lessons, if you will. So that was those two books are called This One's for Me and You, and we call them books of mental meals. Mental meal interpretations, you know, just food for thought to help us maneuver in the world. And those are my two nonfiction efforts. You know what I mean? Very short reads, you know, kind of inspirational, motivational, you know, reads. And then the last two are some fiction. It's a series called the Motor City Survival Series, because when I wrote these books, it was during the time that Detroit was going through bankruptcy. We had the city government corruption, you know, all these things were going on, you know, and everybody was looking at Detroit like it was ground zero, you know. So I wanted to write a story that encompassed people who were still trying to do good things, righteous things, entrepreneurial things in the city, and were still willing to help one another out. So it's a story of four men who have never met before, but through happenstance and going through their own issues, have to band together, band their resources together to help one another out so that they can get through their own problems. One is called If I Had No Loot, and then the follow-up is called The Comfort Zone. And all of them are, all of my books past the Black College Sabbatical play on titles to R&B songs, which kind of ties in my whole music background.
Oh, that's awesome. So
it took a while to come up with that. Now, if I'd have knew Brandon 101 in 2002, then maybe I'd be closer to that Oprah status that Daniel was talking about. But I kind of stumbled upon it over the last few years.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And, yeah, as far as the title, is great, because I always say reading is nutrition for the mind. So, I mean, that fits perfectly. I mean, when you're talking about what you're talking about, your theme with that. And I was also thinking that with your quotes, I mean, yeah, you got to come up with a little graphic background and put those out as memes, because people love memes nowadays, posting on all social media platforms and Twitter, Facebook, you see them everywhere. So, I mean, you gotta get a few of those out there.
I hadn't even thought about that. That's so smart.
Yeah, people love it, and positive memes. People are. Yeah. Rose does a lot.
Yes,
Holly also is known for it. But yeah, that's definitely something for you to look into. Yeah, with your own work, that's awesome. And hopefully, yeah, it's what
I'm
we strive to do, Tracy.
It.
We try to be of help here on the Star Chamber show.
That makes perfect sense, and I'm so glad you guys said that, because, again, you know, I might throw a picture up and write the commentary and just throw it on my website, but that is a way to kind of, you know, continue promoting it. I hadn't even thought about that. See, that's what I mean. You guys are awesome.
Well, we got
to
stick together.
Without being in people's faces too much or feeling like you're in people's faces too much. You just kind of throw fun things out there with your quotes or even excerpts from your book, or meme makers pretty good.
Okay.
The meme maker app.
I'm sure going to look into it. Going to look into it. Oh, my God. Thank you, Rose and Steven. Y'all just helped me out so much. See, that's what I mean.
Yeah, because Lord knows, I mean, you probably know, too, we need more positivity in social media to begin with. So we need some more of the good stuff out there. So some days I don't even want to look at my news feed. So, but if I knew so I was going to see more memes like your kind of attitude out there, then I would be like, okay, I'll look.
Exactly. It makes you feel better about it. That's true. I have a friend that is an author friend, and she does this thing called Tuesday Tea. And she actually just comes up and gives, like, really, really basic, but she just finds a fun, interactive way to give just a quick little writer's tip. You know what I mean? And most of it is stuff that we've been told before, you know, that, you know, if you've written at least one or two books, you know some of these things, but over the course of your travels, you just forget. And it's like friendly reminders, but she does it in such an interactive and entertaining way, and it's generally not any longer than about 10 minutes, you know. But they are the cutest little thing, and I find myself making sure on Tuesdays that I go to her page on Instagram just to kind of, you know, check it out. And I swear each time I look at it, I was like, is she talking to me? Was she there? Like, was she in my head? Oh, my goodness, you know. So that's kind of the, you know, she, you know, her name is Monique Mensa, but she is, that's one of the resources that helps me or that I still kind of look to, you know, and I try to encourage people, like, you know, even, you know, if you are at one of those down points in your artistry, you know, a good Google search, you'll be surprised. That's how I found you guys. You know what I'm saying? A good Google search and just 10 or 20 minutes looking up something, a component of it that maybe you never explored before, you can find something that can really, really help your bottom line, you know?
That's true. And I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did because I'm having a great time tonight for sure. But you're right. And those positive voices, I mean, I find myself, those are the kind of YouTube channels that I gravitate to and subscribe to. Those are the people that I tend to watch if on Twitter or, you know, even on Facebook. You want that type of good energy, positive vibe, especially in the midst of, you know, a year like we've had this past year. So it's definitely a you know, if you've got that kind of vibe and theme, and then it's something definitely I think that, you know, not only is needed, but something that you should get out more. So that's good.
Right.
Yeah. Can't wait. Now we just have to get you on Netflix and Hulu.
I know, right? But you know what? The great thing is, because I remember a few years ago, you know, it seemed like reality TV was just taking over, you know, all of the networks. Everybody was trying to get a different type of ratchet reality show out there. And while that's still a market, it's good to see scripted. It's good to see scripted original stories come back to the forefront, you know what I mean? And, you know, to see so many writers, you know, being, you know, coming to the forefront and having their books turned into movies and stuff. It does make you hopeful, you know. You're just hoping that you can,
absolutely,
you know, put your stories out there and people can come to it. You know what I mean? You're just like, oh, I don't know what it'll take to get somebody to write, you know, to just kind of listen to it. But, you know, I have books in my little store. You know, I have my independent store, and of course they're available on all the facets of Amazon. And then I have free audio downloads too for all of my titles and stuff. So, you know, we try to use the show to, you know, use them as prizes and give them away to writers and stuff. I mean, to our readers and people that might be interested. So, you know. Definitely willing to, you know, offer some things up to your listeners. If you have that opportunity available.
Absolutely, and I'll follow up with you on that for sure. Yeah, and because, you know, and with the audiobooks too, I mean, you're talking about a whole different market, you know, because a lot of those folks, you know, are not, you know, reading print or ebooks. I mean, definitely, that's a whole different market sector, and not saturated, which I love too, because, you know, since ebooks, I mean, you know, everybody's throwing, you know, like you said earlier, oh, I'm just going to throw books up there and get rich. Yeah,
real quick. I'm going to throw it up there real quick.
stuff and not edited, not, you know, not professionally produced. I mean, yeah, that's caused a little bit of a problem, but it's, you know, in terms of the quality of some things and then saturation of the market. But audiobooks still are not a saturated market. I mean, it's not too flooded. I mean, it's definitely a little more selective, you know, as far as what you find on there. And I think that's due to groups like ACX and all maintaining a certain standard. And so, you know, that's good. You know, nobody stops from putting them out. It just means you have to do at least a, you know, a certain quality level to get them out, you know, and that does matter.
Yeah.
And because nobody's checking ebooks too much, just basic format.
No, they just let me throw them on up there. They throw them in Kindle Create and say, hey, go ahead.
Right.
And do so, it, you know. But then
yeah,
the profit margin
is
the smallest that way as well, too. So, you know, you have to sell a lot to get to that $1 million status through an ebook. You know? You know, I just feel like I definitely love the feedback, you know, because I love readers any way that they come, because they all have an appreciation for a different type of appreciation for the story. You know, I have had a lot of people who love the ebook format, and that's because it's quick. You know, and they could take it with them anywhere, you know, and it's, that type of escape. But then you still have people who just love that traditional book. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
they just love that traditional print book. They love the way it feels. Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
You know, for a minute, it was getting scary.
Yeah.
It was getting scary. But I'm one of those people, too. I have a bookshelf. You know, I have my favorites, and some of my favorites, I might have them in ebook form, and some of them I have on audiobook form, but I have them on my shelf as well. You know, I tend to love literature all three ways.
Well, being a music person, you know what I'm talking about when I say vinyl sure made a comeback when everybody thought it was dead.
Hey.
I mean, and I love vinyl. Vinyl's a passion of mine. So I was, of course, in Seventh Heaven when vinyl made the big comeback, and now it's going stronger than ever. You know, it's people love it again. And young people, kids are into it, you know, and I love it. I mean,
yeah, my daughter. My daughter, she turned 24 last year, and that was her brother. But that was one of the things on her list that she wanted for her birthday. He bought her a record player, and she literally has started collecting some of our favorite art. She has, you know, some Stevie Wonder on vinyl. She has Jackson on vinyl. She's got some Prince on vinyl, and I'm sitting here like, I had all of that. And maybe the early 2000s when it was just big surge for people to sell their vinyl, you know, or whatever. And I wound up doing that. And now I just kind of want to kick myself because I had like 45s. I even had a few of my grandmother's 78s. If you can remember those. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you drop them and they'd shatter.
Right? Because
like
they were all thick. They were super thick back then. Oh, my goodness. It's a mess. I was so mad. But my daughter, even my mother, was able to cop for my daughter. She got the Supremes at the Copa on vinyl.
Oh, wow.
Vinyl.
Nice.
Okay.
Oh, and what a great
daughter,
era of music,
just hold
too.
On to that. I said, just hold on to that. Just hold on to it and don't let anybody breathe on it. Just, you know, like in case it's somewhere.
No, when you find one of those gems, you hang on to it.
In a few years. Right. That's
yeah,
I told her
my
that
grandma,
all the time.
Yeah, my grandmother had passed down her 78s, and there was some great jazz and all kinds of stuff we found in there. And yeah, you can't, that's priceless. I mean, just priceless. And, you know, and of course the Motown area you're talking about up through there and just everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, great vinyl, but it does tie to the book world because I've seen young readers that don't even want e-books. They want physical books. And it's an interesting thing because it's almost like counterintuitive because you think they're all digital, all these young, you know, the young generation Z and millennials are just into, you know, the digital world. But the funny thing is that when it comes to books and music, you're seeing more and more of them actually, they kind of like that tangible, that one area where they can have something tangible, and books and music, and you're starting to see it more and more. And it's an interesting phenomenon. And I don't know exactly how to explain it, but maybe it's just, you know, it gives them a nice break from constant digital. You know, it might be, you know, a nice little break from that. You know, it might give them a chance to unplug.
You know, you know how we get caught up in, you know, the new era of technology, and you know we allow our kids to, you know, show us these different things. I remember my daughter was showing me how to download apps and what I could do, and you know all this stuff, and you know I was all caught up in it. And I think that now it is switching. It's particularly in entertainment, even when you go into music and you think about the way that the Grammys were this year. And one of my favorite songs that got a Grammy this year was the Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars, you know, collaboration. And the song, it literally reminds you of something that came out in like the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. It reminds me of a saying that my grandmother used to say, everything good that's new came from something old. So maybe it's the discovery factor for our youngins. You know what I'm saying? They're not as amazed by technology because they grew up with it. It's a part of them. So the things that were active and in place before technology, it's new discovery for them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And they're like, oh, you know, so, you know, it's kind of like in reverse. It's like, you know, it's history in reverse.
So they can help us with their TikTok channels and understanding Bitcoin and the latest PlayStation system, and then we can help them on the good vinyl.
Books. You know, the print books, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Scripted television instead of just all reality. You're going to love it. It's cool. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Music talks about
great.
Love. You're going to love it.
And you're talking my ears too, because I'm a, you know, that's my favorite time, the 70s, 80s to early 90s.
That, to me,
you know, and even the later 60s. Let's go ahead and squeeze that in there too. But that's yeah. I mean, priceless time. I mean, yeah, that's when music really came, I think, from the heart and was not as overproduced and over polished as it is today. Yeah,
exactly.
That was a good time.
Gen Xers have great taste.
Yeah, could be that. I won't argue.
Right. You know, I just, I love what's happening. And because for a while, you know, it just looked really, really mundane and looked really hopeless, you know. But then you see people writing about love and all these young people coming out with all these beautiful songs and, you know, stuff I can add to my books and, you know,
yeah.
what I'm saying? Be like, oh, yeah,
right.
To make a moment, you know. Because that's what I try to do in my stories. I like to make each chapter a moment. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And if it progresses the story on, then great. But I just feel like people are easier to fall in love with your stories when they can actually put themselves in the moment per chapter, per character, you know what I mean? So the music helps with that, the progression in the music and everything like that helps with that. Even in audiobooks, you know, I think it helps.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, put all that
together
and you get a good gumbo.
Oh yeah, hey, that's a great way of describing it. Put it all together and you get a good gumbo. I think I'm gonna have to quote you on that one. there's a meme. Nice. But no, you're right. And yeah, it comes all down to the characters and I think I actually put out a post on Twitter and a few other platforms about where I said, you know, write the stories you want to write, write the characters you want to write. Don't let trends or what you think is expected by others interfere with your authentic process. And then that's the road to producing your best work. And that's, you know, and that's the kind of storytelling that you're describing. I mean, it's the stuff where the characters are coming from your heart. You're not trying to, you know, just do what's popular out there, follow a trend. You know, these are, you know, speaking from you. And that's when you get the kind of stories that connect with people, the ones that, you know, really touch you, you know, deep down.
Absolutely. And they live with you. You can revisit them. They're, no matter how old those stories get, you know, when people come across them and they want to connect with you about them, you can go right back to that moment. I don't care how old that story is or how long it's been since you've examined those characters. When someone is in love with the story and they go back, you can go right back to it because it's authentic. It wasn't something that you created just because you think that's what's trending right now. It really came from your heart, so it'll always be there, you know, and you'll always be able to pull from it. And I think that's what readers appreciate because that's what I'm looking to do now is just, you know, maybe connect with like more book clubs, ways to connect with more book clubs so that I can get that euphoric feeling, even if it is virtual, to just, you know, sit and conversate with people who've actually read your work and, you know, seeing their insight into your stories, which is oftentimes a lot further than you were even thinking when you wrote it, is always intriguing.
Yes.
And it's always inspiring. You know, it makes you want to get right back to the, you know, you leave the meeting and want to fire up the computer and get right back to it because, you know, they've kind of restored your faith, you know. So that's kind of another avenue I'm looking to do more. I've done a few, but I really would love to, you know, figure out a campaign where I can connect with, you know, more book clubs and you know, have them review my work and feature it and be able to sit and talk with them and vibe off of them because, you know, that's just the best. That's the best on every level for a writer, in my opinion, at least for me, you know.
Oh, by far the most rewarding. Yeah.
I've thought about starting a book club, like a Facebook book club. You know how like they have those groups and stuff? And
yes, ma'am.
Like contacting like all the different authors that I know and stuff to see if they would like to join in and
mm-hmm.
see, you know, to promote their work and get it out there. And then, you know, okay, well, somebody surprise us with who read what and
mm-hmm.
give us juicy details of the book. That way someone else might want to read it. I just haven't.
I think that's cool.
Gotten like all my, you know, ideas squared away yet with how I wanted to do it. I didn't know if I wanted to start out with like a group or just a Facebook page and then go from the page to the group, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure which way to go with it.
You sound just like me. I've had this idea for a show just called, you know, an audio show, you know, just kind of like what you guys are doing called The Right Stuff. And, you know, of course, right being spelled W-R-I-T-E, you know. I was, you know, with the same kind of component, you know, I wanted it to be a show where we gave helpful hints. And, of course, you always provided an outlet for, you know, a platform for authors to promote their work or whatever. But then to also feature, you know, different book clubs, you know, because there are some book clubs, people put book clubs together, you know, for all different types of reasons. Some of them just read fiction. Some of them just read books about women. Some of them, you know, are genre based or whatever. And some of them are just young ladies. They want to read, you know, street fiction or whatever. But I wanted to, you know, kind of get into it where I could feature, you know, different book clubs and kind of, you know, make them the stars of the show. And they talk about, you know, whatever book they have, you know, reviewed, the latest book they reviewed and why they liked it or disliked it or whatever, you know, and just give a different component to, you know, just give a writer show that would focus on different aspects of the literary journey. It's not necessarily just about the writers and the authors, but also about the readers and who they are, you know, and I think it gives us authors more insight into who we're preparing these works for, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, again, I'm kind of like you are, Rose. I'm just trying to put all my ideas together and figure out the best way to promote it, you know what I mean, and kind of fill up the time on those weeks that I don't have an author to feature, you know what I mean, but be able to give sound, you know, tips and advice that could help people, you know. So I'm still trying to figure it out, you know, but I'm confident it'll come. You guys are helping me out just with this interview.
Wonderful, wonderful. And that's you know, you're talking about, yeah, as far as like, you know, you also gain from the reader, especially when you get to interact and hear from them. And I think that's an excellent point because I've had that experience many times myself. And I loved, you know, experiences like being invited to a book club where they, you know, read my work and wanted to, you know, discuss the book with me. And that was an amazing experience. And yeah, it's definitely interesting when they see things in your work that, you know, you didn't necessarily work consciously focusing on when you wrote it.
Right,
but it's there,
right.
You know, and that's cool. I enjoy that. That is a very rewarding experience, even more so than, you know, I mean, obviously it's a uphill climb on the financial side for, you know, independent authors. It's not like you said, no, it's, you know, very few are getting rich off of it, but
yeah,
the
right.
Rewards come in other areas too. And that's one for sure. A big one. Mm-hmm. And maybe the most profound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely. That, and then just the fact that I always love when I have encountered a reader and they let me know that they were moved by something that I wrote. You know, like, you know, you always want to think that the things that you write, you know, are funny to you when you're writing them, you know, but it's always great to, like, watch somebody else read it and laugh in the right places, you know, and I write the same way, I feel the same way when I'm writing parts in the book that are emotional, you know, and I remember, you know, being at a book club meeting and, you know, there's one point where one of my books, a young teenage guy loses his mom real unexpectedly, you know, and I didn't know whether I had went deep enough to, you know, display the emotion that I was looking to evoke in writing that until I went to the book club meeting. And she was like, girl, I cried. I just cried. And I was like, did you? I'm so sorry I made you do that. But thank you for telling me that that's exactly what I meant to do. Like, Those are the most profound. I was like, I hate I took you on that emotional roller coaster, but you let me know I mission accomplished with my work. That's what I was trying to do. So cool, you know.
Or when one of your characters helps a reader through a rough time in their life. I've had that feedback before. So I have some very tough, self-determined, heroic characters in some of my work, and they've actually helped inspire some readers through rough times in their lives. I can't tell you how amazing, you know, what an effect it has on you when you hear from, get a very personal, like, note or message from a reader that talks about that. It kind of fits in with you know, you're being moved by, you know, your work. But yeah, when it helps, mm-hmm. you know, somebody, when a character, one of your characters helps somebody through a rough patch, that's also kind of along with that, I think. And I'm sure that, yeah, you've got characters like that based on what I'm hearing on all your work.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying every time.
One thing I suggest to you on any of the stuff that you're talking about doing, if it doesn't cost you money, why are you not doing it?
Right. You are absolutely right about that. You are absolutely right about that. If it's not costing you money, why are you not doing it? You are absolutely right, because I'm still trying to figure out, you know, how with the whole social media component, which is such an easy way to, you know, get mass promote or to get your message out there, but you don't want to put out the same content on every social media platform that you have. You want to, you know, kind of mix it up a little bit. So, like, if you know, so that you, at least if you have some of the same followers on different platforms, you want them to be able to see different content and maybe see different sides of you on each platform. And I'm still just now trying to kind of figure out how to maneuver that way. That's why I, you know, brought up the video blogs and then the radio show, because I'm thinking about promoting those in the avenues and social media that I haven't yet tackled yet. You know, like Twitter. I have a Twitter page, but I haven't really structured it in a way that would be beneficial to my books. But like you say, why not concentrate on doing that, because it's not costing you anything. And if you're not, and if it's not benefiting you, then you're losing. So if you, you know, you put a little more structure to it, you know, then it can't be anything but beneficial, because with no structure, you're not getting anything from it anyway. So you make a good point. You make an absolute good point. I told you guys are teaching me.
If it doesn't work, if you've done it for 6 months to a year and it hasn't done anything for you and you haven't gotten anywhere with it and you've actually put work toward it, mm-hmm. then you can drop that and pick up harder on the one that is working for you.
Absolutely. You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. And the thing about it is, and the other thing that I know that I'm finding too, is that more than anything, like, we can have a bevy of ideas, but the only ones that will really, really, really always stick are the ones that we're consistent on. And consistency has to be a situation that's longer, like you said, at least 6 months. It can't be, oh, I posted three times this week and I didn't get anything from it, so let me abandon it, because you haven't given it enough time, you know. So consistency is key. And that's one thing that the radio show had, you know, built in me, was, you know, staying dedicated enough to do it once a week, Saturday mornings, every week, even when the weather was bad, even when I wasn't feeling good, even when I just really didn't have the inspiration to do it. Now I have those times and I push through them and wind up feeling better, after the first like 10 minutes because I went ahead and did it, even though when I woke up I might not have felt like it, or I didn't put the prep in that I normally do, so I'm kind of going on the fly. But, you know, but the consistency has been, it has helped me out so many different ways. So you make a very, very good point.
And
well,
I think
I started out, you know, 8 months ago working on this trolley. And
mm-hmm.
when I first opened up my Instagram, you know, I couldn't get anybody to follow me hardly, except for a few of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've got companies that are following me and
all
other
right.
people that are following me because they're sitting there, they're seeing what I'm doing and they like what I'm doing.
So, you guys are really, really helping me because even it was a post that I wound up promoting last week on Instagram, just kind of, you know, trying out the promotion portion of it. And it was a quote that I had found somewhere, and it was just saying, if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. And I just took the quote, and then I just took a picture of me, you know, just standing up, you know, because I recently had a big health scare, so I lost a lot of weight, and I had on this really cute dress. So I was like, okay, I'll take this picture, and I'm going to put it with this little quote, you know, and put it on my Instagram. And I looked up, and before I promoted it, it was already doing, you know, pretty well, you know, people were liking it or whatever, and I saw that I was getting pushes to my, you know, clicks to my website. And I was like, so this is what it is. So I was like, let me promote this on Facebook and see, you know, how it, I mean, you know, Instagram and see how it does or whatever. So I did that a few days ago. The promotion just ended. And then tonight when Rose was like, you got to take some of your quotes and make them memes. And I'm like, that is, it really rang to me, you know, because that literally was something I had stumbled into doing, just kind of messing around with my pictures and saw a quote that was cute and was like, oh, okay. So now I'm thinking, oh, man, I'm about to go through my other two books and see, you know, and maybe try to put together some nice little, you know, promotional campaigns and see if I can, you know, maybe try them on my Twitter because I don't post on there a lot, you know, so I can kind of try it out and see how it works, you know. So, yeah.
Those will be good on Instagram, too.
Exactly, yeah. You know I'm going to try it on Instagram because at least I know somebody's watching.
Yeah. If you're doing it on different platforms
mm-hmm.
and you sit down an hour on Monday,
okay,
and have it booked that you're going to sit down for an hour on Monday and make content for all week long and have it
okay.
done to where it automatically posts for you on different
mm-hmm.
days, the content that you
mm-hmm.
want to,
mm-hmm.
then you've only spent an hour on one day and you've got your whole
right.
week done or your whole month done, whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's where Hootsuite is your friend.
Something to me today. That is a word. I'm telling you, I'm getting ready to sit down. Sunday is going to be my day. I'm going to sit down and prepare all of my promotion and just see how this works, and I'm going to use it. I'm going to hit you guys back up and let you know how it works, too, because
definitely.
Nothing beats a failure but a try.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to share some of your memes on my social media when I start seeing them, so I'm ready.
Oh, yes. I'm going to get it together. I'm going to get it together, guys.
I'm ready.
I just don't know.
All you got to do is let me know. I love
don't
sharing
your
cool.
memes.
Yeah,
I will tag
absolutely.
You guys. I will tag you guys.
We'll have fun
don't
with that for sure.
Memes.
No, don't
I
forget the memes.
The more I get into the bottle of wine that I'm drinking, so...
What are you drinking? I'm drinking a little sweet red. What are you drinking?
All right.
I'm drinking a 10-year-old aged pork.
Oh, okay.
And Tracy, every week I always have a glass of Kentucky bourbon when I do the show. So that's what I'm drinking.
All right.
Well,
when I do my show
sure.
on Saturdays, because my show is at Saturday in the morning, so I always say that, you know, it's 12 o'clock somewhere. It's at, you
right.
know, 11 in the morning. So, you know, but I'm always drinking Cabernet, you know. It's, I get, that's a,
yeah.
like a never fail type of situation.
Yeah, I always like I always say, it's you know, you won't get in too much trouble if you just have one or something during the show, but it does make it feel like you're having a good, relaxing visit, you know. So it always adds
absolutely.
A little bit. So.
Absolutely.
Well, we're coming up on about 7 minutes left in the show, so I wanted to make sure that we give you time to tell folks where to connect with you online, since we've been talking about media platforms and your books. Yeah, go ahead and give us some info for our audience to find you online and connect with you.
Absolutely. You guys can all connect with me. I am all over Facebook. That's, you know, I'm old school as far as social media goes. So you can look me up on my author page on Facebook, and that is Tracy E. Christian, and Tracy is spelled T-R-A-C-I-E, E. Christian author page. And then I'm also Tia Leist, the B-side DJ. So if you look up my my broadcasting network, which is the B-side live network on Facebook, and then B-side is spelled B-C-Y-D-E because we dare to be different, phonetically anyway. And you can also find me as Tia Leist on Instagram, Tia Leist on Twitter, Tracy Christian on LinkedIn. You can find all of my books in print, audio, and ebook formats on Amazon, and then also on my website, which is thebside.online. And you can look up, you'll find the network. You'll be able to listen to the broadcast directly from that site, as well as see some of the little mini videos I've done on etiquette, and, you know, get links to all of the authors that I have helped publish.
Awesome. Well, I know I'm definitely going to have to look you up on the platforms and make sure I'm following you. That's for sure.
Because
I'm wanting to read this series of yours because it sounds like a really good character-driven series. And I love the guardian angel element that you have, because it's almost like, you know, when you have a film that has a kind of a narrator kind of worked into the storyline. That's
exactly,
cool.
That's exactly what I was trying to do. And I tried to write the angel, not too celestial, too spiritual, if you will, kind of a really down-to-earth kind of, I kind of took the same idea as the movie Michael. You know how John Travolta was a really cool dancing and drinking angel.
Yep.
That's kind of how I wrote. That's kind of how I wrote the angel in this book. You know, by the time you get to the second book, the angel is like, "Girl, did you read that part? Did you see that part?" And, you know, and kind of gives you the the overview to kind of pull everybody's storyline together. You know, because you really are enthralled in it at that point. So that's kind of how I wrote it. You know, you will be able to tell when you explore the books that, you know, I was really trying to set the scene. It was my first book with the very first one, but it sets the stage. And then, you know, going into the second and the third installments, you can really see that I was coming into my comfort level as a writer and realizing, hey, this is your joint. You can really write it any way you want to. And sometimes I still have to remind myself of that.
Well, it's probably a good choice, too, because if you had your angel appearing in some massive, spectacular celestial form, your characters would probably be quite disrupted.
Exactly.
Be running
away. Exactly. So you got to make them down to earth, you know, like, whoa, you know.
Right. That's awesome. But, yeah, we're definitely going to have to connect with you and follow your accounts there. That's awesome. And T. Elise, that's on the DJ side of things. And that's where you're at on Twitter and everything.
DJ.
Yeah, and some of the best songs of all time have been on the B-sides on 45 single releases. So that's I love the illusion there. Definitely a fan of B-sides.
Absolutely, that's where I came from. But I call the entire network Retro Radio. You know, my very first 45 was Blame It on the Boogie by the Jackson 5. So, you know.
Oh, wow. Wow. I hope you still have that
one.
On,
oh, man, I wish I did. I got it digital, you know, but I got it digital. Now, all of my vinyl I wound up getting rid of, not knowing any better, but I did keep all of my programs because I actually went to the Bad Tour in 88, so I still have the program. It's authentic. It's not even wrinkled. It's just, you know, holding on to it.
That's a collectible. Yeah, most definitely.
Okay.
Most definitely. Yeah, because Holly just, she inherited some of her brother's vinyl. He passed, unfortunately, but she just brought back today a couple of near mint condition Jimi Hendrix albums, first pressings. I'm like,
ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
So, yeah, you can't beat that, man. No, it's going to make me salivate. She's got some gems.
I know, right?
But yeah, we will definitely be catching up with you to talk more vinyl, because that's, I love it. But with a couple of minutes left, though, I'm gonna sign off, and then go ahead and make your final comments for the night, Tracy, and then Rose and Daniel will take us out. But I've had a great time visiting with you, and definitely want you back on the show sooner than later. And so everyone, this is Stephen, and next week at Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, we'll have another Star Chamber show spotlighting awesome creative guests such as Tracy E. Christian. So thanks a lot, Tracy, and now over to you.
Oh, well, thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate the time with you guys, and I definitely will, you know, follow up with me, and I appreciate your support, and I will come back anytime you guys will have me. I think you're doing a wonderful job, and I appreciate what you do. Don't stop.
So nice to meet you this evening.
Thank you so much, Rose. It was nice to meet you. Thank you for the idea for the memes. I'm definitely going to use you. We have to connect on social media so we can tag
yes,
each other,
ma'am.
Support each
other. That'd be awesome.
And Daniel, thank you so much, too, as well.
No problem, hon.
We got Talk Book Club.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Really, really soon.
All right, Rose, take us out.
All right.
Tonight has been great. There has been so much knowledge just circling around, and it's just been such a wonderful, like, rainbow after a storm, and I'm so grateful to have met our guest and got to talk with her about all the different things that she does. And Daniel?
And I appreciate Tracy being with us tonight. I hope you've learned a lot about different avenues that you can actually take as a creative. She, you know, as you heard tonight, she fell into doing things that she didn't think that she'd be doing, but they are working out wonderful for her, and hopefully they'll work out wonderful for you if you just get out and try. And until we get together next week, be creative. This is Daniel Dark signing out.